Once I was setting off to Boston to spend a weekend, and I thought I might get guidance for how the weekend was going to go by paying attention to the symbols of everyday life that I might encounter along my road. I made it my intention to look for the first unexpected, extraordinary, weird, coincidental thing that entered my field of perception and use this as an advisory for the journey. So I'm off on the road heading east from my home to Boston. It didn't take me long to get a message from the world. I looked up at a billboard by the road that hadn't been there last time I'd driven this road that I know fairly well, and there was an advertisement for Zima, and it said, "You can kiss goodbye to your expectations." Now, I was resistant to this message. I was certainly determined not to fulfill it by acting it out in some literal fashion, but the message was right. My dream of life unraveled, my weekend in Boston unraveled. As a matter of fact, I didn't spend more than the first evening in Boston. I gave the whole thing up. What is this about? It's about getting a message from the world which will speak to us in the manner of dreams if we learn to pay attention. Remember what paying attention entails. To attend is to stretch yourself, to stretch your awareness, to take in signals and signs and patterns of significance that in your everyday rush you might omit to notice. So in this last session of this dream journey together, I want to help you to find your own ways to navigate by synchronicity and the dreamlike symbols of everyday life. I also want to share with you some stories about the interweaving of dreams and waking reality that might expand even further your sense of the possible and bring a quality of magic into your awareness of what goes on under everyday circumstances. I want to share some more suggestions for creative fun and games with all these techniques of conscious streaming. And finally, I want to get to the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter, beyond all the details, beyond all the travelogues and itineraries and techniques, the heart of the matter is the dialogue between your little self and your big self. So we're going to look a little further at how your higher self is hunting you in your dreams and in the dreamlike events of waking life, hoping that you will look up, look around, look within, and hear it. You are within your higher self. And you'll understand that once you begin to pay attention. Synchronicity. Jung gave us the word. It means patterns of meaningful coincidence. We tend to say just a coincidence, as we say just imagination or only a dream. All these dismissive statements should be junked together. Coincidence, synchronicity, and waking life is a tremendous navigational beacon when you learn to pay attention. Let me share some stories about that. On another occasion in my life, also involving a visit to the Boston area, this time I'm returning from the Boston area rather than going to it, I decided once again to look for a signal from the world about my life. I had spoken rather strongly at a particular gathering, and I thought I might have overdone it, and I'd better consider the consequences of speaking so strongly. So, once again, my intention is to accept the first unusual, extraordinary, coincidental message from the world as a direct response to my question, what are the consequences of my outspoken behavior at that gathering? Well, I'm sailing along the Massachusetts Turnpike. It's a glorious day. The sun is shining. My foot is on the gas pedal. The speedometer has climbed up to 90 or 95 miles per hour, unnoticed by me, until I look out the car window, and there, sailing parallel to me, looking at me through his sunglasses in an unmarked car, I notice a Massachusetts state trooper with his hat on. He's looking at me, I'm looking at him. I ease my foot off the gas pedal, my car slows down, all the way down to the Massachusetts state limit, 65 miles per hour, and as I slow down in my vehicle, the cop slows down in his, still riding parallel, still contemplating me through his shades. When I've hit the legal speed limit, he slams his foot down on the gas pedal, tips his hat to me, and takes off. Did I get a message? Yes, I got a message. My message was, I was not going to be punished this time. There'll be no ticket, no fine, no consequences this time, but I should be aware that I was being watched. My behavior was being studied, and I'd better be more careful and more thoughtful. about speed limits, in every sense of the word, in future. The world will give us answers. It will speak to us in the manner of dreams, through symbols and synchronicities, if we pay attention. There is an ancient method of divination that invokes this principle of synchronicity, and I'd like to take you back there a moment, in your mind. Let's make a little dream trip together, back to ancient Greece, and to the precinct of Hermes, Lord of Dreams and Divination, in the ancient city of Pherae. Let's go there together. Clear a little space for this. Follow your breathing for a moment. Follow the flow of the images I will share with you, which will take you into a sacred space where you can bring your own question and afterwards take it out into the world and look for an answer to your question from the world. This is a process of learning to put your answer to the world, but I want to empower it for you by taking you to the site of a very powerful and singular oracle in ancient Greece, sacred to the Psychopompos, the guide of souls, Lord of Dreams, Lord of Divination, Lord of Travelers and Commerce, Hermes. So here you are. You are approaching a walled enclosure. It is in fact a walled market, a market square with a wall around it. You are coming to the gate in the wall. You are entering the market gate. It's the close of day. Dusk is falling. There are peddlers and hawkers packing up their stalls and booths. Packing up their supplies of olive oil and fish and olives and fabrics. And you're walking amongst the market stalls at the close of day. You're walking through the walled market to its very center, where you see a rough stone figure. It's really almost unhewn. There's just the vague impression of man-like features. Almost an unhewn stone standing in the middle of the market. There are some oil lamps flickering around the statue. You're coming here to ask your question of the patron of divination. You have no middleman to pay, no psychic, no priest. You don't have to give anything except your good intention. If you see yourself bringing a little oil to feed the lamps of Hermes, you may do that. It's up to you. So here you are, and perhaps you are carrying a question with you that has become important in your life. You need guidance on an issue. Spend a moment now considering what question you need guidance on at this moment in your life. And when you have your question, large or small, you are going to move up to the statue and you are going to whisper your question into the right ear of the god. And then you are going to walk back through the market, back through the stalls at the close of day, back to the gate in the wall, and out through the gate, and back into your body and your everyday world, with this intention. From this moment forward, the first scrap of human speech, the first animal or bird call, the first unusual, unexpected, striking thing that catches your attention might be an answer from the world, empowered perhaps and accelerated by your putting your request at the market oracle. It might be a response to your question. So carry your question now into your life, into your world. It might be the first scrap of human speech you hear. That's how it worked at this ancient market oracle. After you put your question into the ear of Hermes, you put your hands over your own ears until you had walked all the way back to the market gate and out into the bustle of life outside. You take your hands off your ears. The first human words you hear could be a direct answer to your question. It's interesting, isn't it? There are many ways of divination, many means of divination. Tarot cards, I Ching, runes, ether, cowrie shells, geomancy, following the flight of birds or the patterns of clouds. But the simplest and, I think, the most accurate means of divination, as a way of getting a second opinion on your own intuitive knowing, your own dreaming, your own dream journeys, is to put your question to the world in some way like this, and trust that the world, once you've given it a frame within which you can perceive its response, will give you a pattern of events, or a single startling or striking event or phrase that will give you an answer. So let's move now to the interrelatedness of dreams and waking events. We need good boundaries in many senses in life. I don't want to see things with my eyes open that I see with my eyes closed. That would be very confusing. Nonetheless, there is an interweaving and interconnectedness between the worlds of dream and the worlds of physical reality that we need to observe. Let me share two stories with you about that, both involving, curiously enough, San Francisco. The first is a story shared with me by a woman dreamer in San Francisco, whose private life, frankly, had been on hold for a while. She felt a bit blocked in her relationships, and perhaps in other aspects of her life. And she decided, by methods we've discussed, to incubate a dream for guidance. Now, she was a woman of very strict Catholic upbringing, and she was somewhat disappointed in the midst of her dream to discover that the dream guide who had come to her was a Roman Catholic priest. But as she spent time with him, she discovered he was a singularly warm and human and modern man whose company she enjoyed, whose conversation she enjoyed. He took her up on top of a cathedral, and looking down from the spire of the cathedral, she recognized the features of the city of Dublin in Ireland, which she had visited some years before. She saw the river, she saw the rooftop, she saw the landscape. She had a generally good time, and his message to her was essentially, enjoy the life you have, make the most of the time you've got, accept the simple joys and pleasures of life. Which is a very interesting message from a dream guide who appears as a Catholic priest. Well, she woke up from the dream and she wondered how to honour it. And she thought, well, I'll go down to an Irish pub I know in town that I haven't been to for a long time, where there's good live music, and see what's going on. She goes down to the pub. She meets some friends there, or brings some friends with her. She meets a quite attractive man who strikes up a conversation in front of the jukebox and asks her if she likes a certain song that he wants to put on, and it's a song that she does like, and she thinks this is promising. Her friends are a bit skeptical. Is this a pickup in a bar? It's really going to not work out. When he suggests that she should listen to a particular singer or singing group she's not familiar with, she decides she'll play a game. She calls it the Joni Mitchell test. She'll listen to the music the man says she should listen to, and if she likes his choice in music, she decides, she'll go out with him. So she makes it her resolution, when she next has the opportunity to go to a record store, to pick up a copy of the album he's suggested and see if she likes it. He describes the cover of the CD she's going to look for. On the cover of the CD, there's a picture of two people in thigh-high boots. You can't miss it, he tells her. Well, she gets back into the bustle and the hectic schedule of her waking life, and she forgets about her intention to pick up the record until a couple of days later, when she's passing a record store. And she goes in, and she cannot for the life of her remember the name of the album or the group or the singer. But there, smack in front of her, eye level on the shelf, is a cover of a CD that shows two people in thigh-high boots. So she picks it up, brings it home, puts it on her player, likes the first song, loves the second song, which has a sort of, you know, gloomy coal miner's daughter kind of note, but she loves that stuff, and she's thinking, this fellow must be okay if he likes this music. Listens to tape three and is blown away, because tape three is a song she recorded off the radio 10 years before. She's been looking for the group, or the name of the singer, never found it, always wanted to discover the album, and here it is, recommended by the man she met in the pub, because of the dream of the Irish priest on top of the cathedral. So she snatches up the CD again to have another look at the cover and see what is going on here. And when she looks at the cover of the CD again, behind the pictures of the two people in thigh-high boots, she sees the landscape of Dublin with the cathedral and the river, the same landscape from the same aerial perspective she saw in the dream, shown to her by her dream guide, the Catholic priest. I understand she's having quite a good time, since she decided to date the man who recommended this particular album. If you're following me through the twists and turns of a tale like this, perhaps you'll recognize some aspect of magic and magical possibility in your own life. You know, you see bumper stickers in life that say, shit happens, forgive my French, or don't. My bumper sticker reads, magic happens. It's a question of how you look at things, because as you change your attitudes and expectations, you draw different people, events, opportunities, and energies towards you. So be very careful about what beliefs or intentions you buy into. Be very careful of how you limit and check yourself. If you hear a story like this and can relate it in some way to your own life, you're in process of enlarging your horizons of expectation, your sense of the possible. You are reopening your accounts with possibility. Let me share another tale, another serpentine tale, winding tale, of the interface between dream and waking reality from my own life. It's quite relevant to how I come to be speaking to you in these sessions. So let me share it with you carefully, but omitting, I hope, none of its telling detail or its magic. It's another story of San Francisco. When I was on tour for my book Conscious Dreaming, my publisher sent me to San Francisco. I rolled up at my hotel, a funky hotel near the entrance to Chinatown, and I noticed something marvelous about the doorman who opened the door of my cab. He was wearing a tailcoat of midnight blue embroidered with moon and stars. And I looked at him, and I looked at the cover of my book, which also has a midnight blue sky with moon and stars, and I said to the doorkeeper, "You're wearing the jacket of my book." "Aha," said the doorkeeper, "your book is wearing my jacket." So I knew from the little shiver of excitement that ran through me and the tricksterish smile on the doorman's face that I was on the edge of interesting things about to unfold in San Francisco. I didn't stop to interpret this magical moment, magical mirroring of jackets. I just decided to go with the flow. Well, the flow was pretty interesting. My first appointment in San Francisco that day was at a cinema, the Embarcadero Cinema Complex. My publishers had decided to send me to watch a movie with a local columnist in the Bay Area whose speciality is taking people he finds interesting to watch a movie and then having a talk about it afterwards. An interesting proposition. However, I had not been very enthusiastic about this because the choice of the movie on my schedule was Who Shot Andy Warhol, and although I have no objection to the film, I didn't think it was ideal for a discussion about dreams. The night before arriving in San Francisco, I remembered a bit of a dream I didn't understand, in which I am in the rain with a Catherine Deneuve-type willowy blonde who is very interested in me but really doesn't, you know, draw me strongly, but who finally I agree to embrace, and umbrellas are very important, and that's about all I remember, and this dream memory is hovering with me as I go down to the Embarcadero Cinema in San Francisco, and I don't know what it means. It doesn't seem of great consequence, but I'm curious. So, I arrive at the cinema. And the columnist appears, and he tells me that we're not going to see the movie that was scheduled. We are now going to watch a re-release of an old French movie called The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, starring Catherine Deneuve. So here I am entering my dream space, the night before I have dreamed of the movie, and now I am going in to watch the movie in my waking reality, and there is Catherine Deneuve on stage, and there are the umbrellas, and there is the rain, and there is this cold northern city, and there is this whole surreal atmosphere of hyper-vivid colours, and everyone singing their dialogue, and it's all very dreamlike. And I'm thinking, well, I shouldn't have any problem talking about dreams in relation to watching this movie when I freeze in my seat, because I am now entering in my physical reality a deeper dream. The heart of the movie, it turns out, is about the hero's desire to own a 1950s period Esso gas station. And as I watch him maneuvering to get ownership of his period 1950s Esso gas station, I am transported back into a dream I had more than a year previously, the dream that led me to choose the publisher of Conscious Dreaming, who has now sent me to San Francisco, where I'm watching this movie. In the dream more than a year before, I am driving up to a period, circa 1950s, Esso gas station, and the station looks great. You know, the pumps are nicely rounded, it's got a nice stylish quality to it. But I overshoot the gas pumps because my engine is overcharging. And I have to back up in order to get my car filled up, and I have some trouble getting the nozzle in the tank, but then it's all right, and the figures on the gauge are going up slowly. And I woke up from that dream thinking, well, if I were a Freudian, I mean, I'd have no trouble with this dream, you know, getting a nozzle into the tank and so on. But not being a Freudian, I was open to other aspects of possibility. And at the time of that dream, I was enmeshed in negotiations about getting my first nonfiction book on dreams published. My agent had found a person who seemed to be the ideal publisher, but she didn't want to pay as much money as my agent thought we needed. And we were wondering whether we should shop the book around to get more money. And we were still in the midst of this when I had the dream. Well, in my dream, I've come up to the right gas station, it all feels good, but I'm overcharging and I have to back up. When I filled up my tank, I have plenty of gas for the journey and things feel good. After half an hour thinking about that dream, I called my agent that morning and I told him, Stuart, we will sell the book to Crown Publishers, to the editor Leslie Meredith you found, because of my dream. And he agreed. And Leslie, my publisher, liked the story. That's how Conscious Dreaming came to be published. So it was a very practical dream in my life. Bear with me and go forwards or backwards, depending on the way you look at these things, to that movie house in San Francisco. Here I am sitting in the movie house looking at the period SO gas station from my dream of more than a year before. The story has further stages. I don't need to go through them with you now. I just want to share with you something of the fabric and texture and enjoyment and shivers of a dreamer's life, a life that is open to you if it seems to be your path. You enter a sequence of events, like the ones I described in San Francisco for myself and for the woman who dreamed of Dublin and found the man and the record album with Dublin on the cover, and you know you're in a flow state. This is flow reality. You're living in flow. Your life follows a different law, a different logic. It's great. You must have known such moments in your life. It is out of such flow states, of course, that our great creative breakthroughs and discoveries come, that we extend our energy, our ability to deliver whatever we need to deliver, our ability to get things done, our ability to reach to a deeper source than the everyday mind and draw directly from that source. It is from this flow state that the great songs are written, the great poems are written, the great books are written, the great scientific discoveries come from this flow state too. We all know it. Dreaming, the passion and the practice of dreaming, dream journaling, these are tremendous tools for releasing the possibility of creative flow in your own life. You may follow it in whatever direction you choose. As a writer, I find that for many years now, my books, fiction and nonfiction, flow directly, almost seamlessly from my dreaming, and in very practical ways from my dream journaling. As a writer, I find that when I get up in the morning and start transcribing my rough notes from the pad on my bedside table, I am beginning to flex my writing muscles. I am beginning to enter a sense of flow. I am releasing the consequences of whatever I do. I am open to source energy and source insight. I am not checking, correcting, editing myself, listening to naysayers in the mind. I am in flow. You can use dream journaling not only to develop your practice as a writer, although that's a natural continuation, and to develop your skills and gifts as a storyteller, but to expand your creative functioning in any area of life that interests you. Let me dwell on that point of developing your gifts as a storyteller. This is one of the great gifts of conscious dreaming, that through writing and retelling and sharing your dreams and working with dreams, you will discover and be able to tell the larger story of your life, find yourself within it, and live with the courage and passion that will bring. In the process, you will also increase your ability to tell stories of any kind with other people. We've used the word shaman or shamanic a lot within this series. The shamans are not only the first doctors, the first dream analysts, the first psychologists, the first priests, they're the first storytellers and dramatists. And story has its own power for healing. Story is therapy. A story in which you can find the larger magic and mythology of your life is empowering for life and can be a direct source of healing. So to develop your art and ability as a storyteller through conscious dreaming is one of the most important aspects of this practice. And it was the combination of dreaming and storytelling that in many traditions led to the great compositions. I think back to the tradition of the bards in ancient Celtic society, particularly in Scotland and Ireland, where some of my own family ancestors come from. You know, during those long winter months, the shut-up times, when on the west coast of Scotland, for example, you know, the wind is lashing against the rocky coast, it's pretty dark even at midday, the bards, both apprentice bards and master bards, would shut themselves up during the hours of thin sunlight that they had, emerging only after dark and before dawn, to live in the dark close to the other world and its spirits, to exercise the arts of memory, and to compose the intricate oral compositions that carried the learning, the wisdom, the lore, the rights to royal succession, the knowledge of the spirits, the knowledge of the paths to the other world that would carry this on from generation to generation. You see the seamless combination of dreaming, staying close to the dream world, and of developing the arts of storytelling. The path of conscious dreaming is the path of soul remembering, of reclaiming knowledge and insight that belonged to your soul and spirit before you came into this incarnation. There are great teaching stories about that. One of the very most thrilling and interesting comes from Plato in the last pages of the Republic, when he tells the story of a soldier called Er, who died and came back, while lying on his funeral pyre, and came back with an extraordinary story of where people go after death and where they are before they are born. And part of the story that I want to remind you of now is about how the souls or spirits, prior to their incarnation in physical form, returning from wherever they have been between life experiences, are given the opportunity to choose the patterns of their life, the paradigmas. That's where we get the word paradigm from. In Plato it means the pattern of life. The returning souls are given an opportunity to choose the patterns of life. Of course, they don't necessarily choose wisely. Someone thinks it will be great to be a king and discovers that actually that carries a curse. Someone decides to choose a pattern of life of a very modest experience, and it turns out to be one supremely happy, rich in relationship, rich in love, rich in sharing. So the souls, according to Plato's myth of Er, are given their opportunity to choose the patterns of their life, and then they are sent into this world to take up habitation in physical bodies. And on their way, they are given a draught of the waters of Lethe, the waters of forgetfulness. And some of them drink deep and forget almost everything they knew before they came into mortal life. And some take a smaller drink and come into mortal life remembering more. This story is about you, and it's about me. It's about what we have forgotten, and what at the right time, through the right techniques, we can begin to remember, bringing back the knowledge of soul and spirit, bringing acquaintanceship, relationship with the higher self within which we exist and have our being. What my experiences as an active dreamer suggests to me is something you can test for yourself. My experiences in conscious dreaming suggest to me that each of us may be born within a family of lives, being lived in different times, places, and conditions, connected to each other, but also connected to a central hub, as spokes of a multidimensional wheel might lead upwards as well as inwards to a central hub, a central source, which I think of as the higher self, although the term oversoul might also well describe it. In my dreaming, conscious dreams and spontaneous dreams, I've learnt about lives that seem connected to me in different times and places, ranging from that druid in Scotland of 1,000 years ago, whose life challenges are ones I recognize in my current life, to other beings, to a Royal Air Force pilot shot down over occupied Europe in World War II and killed by Nazi collaborators, who seemed to understand the practice and tradition of an esoteric mystery order that I have not belonged to in this lifetime, but whose inner traditions I have always seemed to know, as an insider might know these things, to other life experiences, to the experience of a Greek or a man of Greek ancestry on the eastern edge of the Mediterranean world in the 3rd century of the Common Era, a wonderful teacher, wonderful friend, since he first started coming to me in childhood dreams and visions, but whose life had two characteristics that when I considered them, I wanted to depart from in my life. One characteristic was that he belonged to a very secretive order, very hierarchical system, that had little interest in the lives of ordinary people, and in fact looked down upon them. The second was that his order was an order of men, in a society in which women were considered second-rate individuals. I consider the story of his life relevant to me as a teaching example. In my life, I have chosen to share such gifts as I may have, such tools as I may discover, with anyone who can use them and bring this to where people live. I'm a man with a cause and a passion, which is to return our society to the ways of a dreaming culture, which will help us, I believe, to understand ourselves better, to safeguard and conserve the earth that sustains us, and put us back in touch with higher sources of spiritual wisdom. I've chosen also to be a defender of women in this lifetime. But to pursue the main point, I feel from my dream experiences that these lives and others are intimately connected with me. From a linear point of view, I might regard these as reincarnational experiences, or might not. From a multidimensional viewpoint, the viewpoint we can sometimes rise to in deep meditation and the higher levels of conscious dreaming, from a multidimensional viewpoint, these lives are all being lived simultaneously. And what I do now can feed back into those lives and forward from them into mine and forward and backwards into lives in the linear future. The common denominator from my point of view, as I've come to understand these things, or still struggle to understand these things with the perspective of an active dreamer, the common hub, the common factor is the mutual relationship with a higher center of identity and knowledge, which I will call, or continue to call, the higher self. The open secret of the Western mystery traditions, as of other traditions, is that you will understand the relationship between your ordinary self and the higher self when you are ready. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. The most fundamental life teacher who is waiting for your preparedness and recognition is in no way alien to you. It is your own higher self. You may have guardians and advisors and spiritual guides of various kinds, but make no mistake, through all the forest and all the menagerie of entities you might encounter, through all those 400,000 species described in the Puranas, maybe, beyond all of these, your fundamental life relationship that will never fail you and is always there to be drawn upon when you are ready, when you are open, when your channels are clear, is the relationship with your own higher self. Plotinus, from the Neoplatonist school, is the clearest Western source on these matters that I know. He says, to paraphrase him, when the soul begins to rise, it comes not to anything alien to itself, but to its own higher self. When the soul begins to rise, it comes not to anything alien to itself, but to its own higher self. He also says, powerfully, impassionedly, the soul has the power to conform to her character the destiny that may be allotted to her. So we have twin teachings here from this much forgotten, unfortunately, Western shaman philosopher. The first insight is that as you rise in your spiritual evolution, as you become more conscious in all aspects of your life, as dreamer, meditator, experiencer of this world and other worlds, you will rise to clearer and clearer communication and maybe ultimately to fundamental fusion and identification with your own higher self. Yet that fusion or identification takes place, and I have seen it take place repeatedly in the lives of people close to me and people who have come to me. You will be different. You will connect with a higher self on a still higher level, and you will bring the gifts of your deepest source energy into your world in a way which will be profoundly positive and healing and creative for all those around you. A tantalizing question that waits for your exploration is the connection between your identity in your higher self and that shining body, that body of light, I described in a previous session as one of the fundamental vehicles of soul and spirit. I have no theory about these things. I study the theories of others, but I do, as a shamanic practitioner as well as an active dreamer, have some personal insights which I would like to share with you. When I moved to upstate New York, I started dreaming of Native American shamans of long ago. I mentioned something of these encounters in an earlier session. I want to share a deeper and more personal aspect of these encounters with you at this point. One of the characters who appeared to me was a warrior shaman who gave me a good scare when he turned up in a conscious dream wearing a wooden fright mask. He was a man of war, a man capable of killing at a distance, who used his powers not for evil, but to protect his people and fight for his people at a time of incessant tribal warfare and wars promoted by the conflict of European empires in North America. A formidable character who tested me, and against whom at one point I had to learn to defend myself. When we finally made our peace and accepted each other on each other's terms, I had an extraordinary moment, fully conscious, fully waking, in which I saw him fuse into some aspect of my being in his body of light. So that for me some part of him lives with me now. It's not a dominant part, but some part of him lives with me, and perhaps some part of me lives with him in his own time 300 years ago. I don't know, but I saw a fusion between the shaman of 300 years ago in his body of light and some aspect of my own body of light. After that, I seemed to know things I did not have rational access to, or even the possibility of knowing, before this encounter. In my work of helping people to bring back aspects of their soul energy they might have lost in the course of life, in my work of practicing soul retrieval, I've sometimes come across a phenomenon even more beautiful and more luminous than what I notice and share and feel privileged to share. When I see the light come back in the eyes of a person who's recovered, the lost 5-year-old or the lost teenager, or the one who went away after the bust-up of that relationship, broken-hearted. Sometimes I've seen something larger, more extraordinary, more thrilling, even more luminous, difficult to explain in simple, halfway rational-seeming words. But I will share what of it I can explain to you in such words as I can find. I have sometimes seen a radiant version of a person who has lost something of themselves and is ready to become whole-souled again, coming to them that seems to transcend anything that they had lived up to this point in their waking life, but is in no way alien. I normally perceive the shining being as winged, winged in the luminous body, winged in the shining body of spirit. I know when I am privileged to reintroduce this aspect of shining spirit to someone who is ready to receive it, that I am facilitating an encounter or a re-encounter between a person who has lived up till now in a certain state of identity and consciousness and is now ready to ascend to a union or a fusion with a higher aspect of their own self, appearing to them in its shining body, winged, luminous, able to fly to the higher realms, and I feel gifted sometimes to be present at, to attend to, this reintroduction. You are ready at any moment in your life to encounter or re-encounter your own higher self. You are ready, to be quite precise, at the moment when you can clear a space from your ordinary preoccupations and ordinary habits in which the encounter is possible. This is the image of the dove descending into the cup or chalice, which must be open and ready to receive. The image comes to us in dreams. I think of a dream in which I am looking down from an eyrie high above the bottom of a cave, where I see the hero of the dream, a person different from myself, perhaps not alien to myself, clearing rubble to make a space. And I notice that up there in the eyrie where I am, a higher being, larger being, is throwing down tools from time to time to help the hero continue clearing a space. The hero never looks up to see what is supporting his life. He never looks up to see the higher entity that is throwing down the occasional tool or means of support to help him in his task. But I feel good about the dream because I know he is clearing a space in which eventually he may be able to look up and recognize the factor that supports his life, his own deeper self. That dream, interestingly enough, was a dream that was framed as an in-flight movie on a plane in which I was traveling, in the dream around it. So dreaming in the more familiar sense of the word, dreaming in the sense of night dreams, spontaneous night dreams, is also quite relevant to the means by which you might reawaken to the existence of your own higher self and the possibility of dialogue with it. The rest is clearing that space, getting rid of habits, preoccupations, negativity, self-limiting beliefs that stand in your way. It will involve a period of testing. It will involve a period of purgation and purification. It will involve going through the fire. It ain't necessarily all going to be easy. It ain't necessarily all for our comfort. It ain't necessarily about returning us to normal functioning in the most limited psychiatric definitions of that word. It is about transformation. It is about opening to a larger life. It is about living as a multidimensional being and contributing to the reshaping, renewing of our species as a more generous and larger version of itself. I wish you well if you decide to follow this path of adventure. May your doors and gates and paths be open, and your doors and gates and paths between the worlds. And may the doors and gates and paths of any who wish to do you or those you love any harm be closed. May it be so, and may you live your best dreams.